Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Friday, the 31st of May. It's almost over. June will be here tomorrow, Saturday, so I hope you're ready. The summer is coming at us fast. In Illinois, did you hear about this? The cops released the Jussie Smollett report. All their, you know, investigative documents related to the investigation of Jussie Smollett. You remember, this is the guy, the actor from the hit show Empire, and he hired the two brothers to beat him up, and then he blamed it on a guy, and a white guy in a MAGA hat, or a couple of guys on him in a MAGA hat. So it turned into a big fiasco. You know the story. And then it was the female state attorney, Ms. Fox, and she declined to prosecute the case. The cops are pissed. And that's why they're letting out all this info now. They could have held on to it. By the way, I know this from investigating cases. It's tough if you don't have a charge to release any info. Did you see the number of pages? Thousands and thousands of pages. Which leads to this fun observation. There are more pages in the report on Jussie Smollett than there are in the Mueller report. Millions and millions and millions of dollars spent. And we have 500 odd pages. Approximately half of that we haven't seen yet in volume two. And look, the big news this week is the presser. And all the presser did was take whatever shred of dignity, reputational value that Mueller had before any of all this and just flushed it down the toilet. Remember that poll a few weeks back where Bob Mueller was the most trustworthy political figure in our country? He ranked higher than any Democrat, any Republican. And that's because people out there were still delusional that he was or is acting as an independent force in all of this. As Alan Dershowitz, my noted Harvard professor, put it, he didn't just put his finger on the scale of justice. He put maybe his elbows, a whole arm onto it, and leaned into it. And that's exactly what happened in these remarks. Now, I always wear my lawyer hat. I keep coming back to it. And incidentally, my lawyer friends and I talking about all this, and among them, trust me, are not too many Trump guys or ladies. These are Californians and attorneys, and most of them quite liberal. But they are absolutely baffled by what Mueller said in his remarks. And the critical part of it, it all comes down to this little phrase where he literally changed the measure of guilt in this country. So, well, I have it here. I came in so fast, and I'm getting my radio shoes on. So bear with me. Yeah. So here's what he said. If we had the confidence that the president had not clearly committed a crime, we would have said so. That is the phrase that then now everybody is running with and claiming, aha, see, Trump, he's a dirty bird and he ought to burn for this. Now, I distilled this phrase myself. I took pen and paper to it and I decided that we would come up with what this new standard of guilt would be. And the standard of guilt is that you have to have a high confidence of no crime being committed. That's the new standard. Well, hell's bells, I want to see all's tax returns held to this standard. The IRS now will need a high confidence that no cheating has occurred on your taxes, that every one of your deductions is proper, that every one of your listed business expenses is proper. Next time your girlfriend, your Chiquita, your wife ends up dead somewhere, this doesn't happen to everybody, but, you know, there are some among us where this can occur. If you're Drew Peterson, it happens more than once. At any rate, to those of you who have that happen, I mean, you got to prove your innocence with high confidence. The F is that? It's guilty, not guilty. And we and our founding fathers and the courts over the years place a great deal of thought into this. It's the burden of the state to prove your guilt. What you saw in that press conference was a sad, broken man who came up short. It's like trying to score a goal. You know, you play soccer. I don't know. Water polo. My son plays water polo. So you throw the ball and you miss in water polo. You throw the ball into the net, right into the goal. And you miss. You go, wait a minute. Stop the play. The goalie comes out, or the ref in this case, the ref comes out and moves the goal over a little bit. Now we got it. It's in. That's what happened here. And there's really no other way of explaining it. Now, I'll tell you, so I, as soon as I heard the presser, so we, you know, in very short notice, woke up in the morning, so we've got this presser, Mueller's coming on, and he's going to give some brief remarks from the Justice Department. And I said, oh boy, here we go. So Mueller gets up, and as soon as the presser was done, and I heard all of this, I said, you know, this is a dog whistle, right? This is going to be picked up by Congress, by Democrats in Congress, to move forward with impeachment. And sure enough, immediately the Democrats seize on it. And my sense of this, of course, is that it's political suicide. This is a kamikaze move on the part of the Democrat Party. Trump is baiting them into it with his tweets. Did you see the tweet that almost melted down the mainstream media this week? Yesterday, Trump tweeted out at 6:57 a.m. Pacific time, Russia, Russia, Russia. That's all you heard at the beginning of this witch hunt hoax, dot, dot, dot. And now Russia has disappeared because I had nothing to do with Russia helping me get elected. It goes on to say it was a crime that didn't exist, blah, blah, blah. So everyone seized upon this, right? As Trump admitting that Russia helped him get elected. Trump wants this to happen. I don't know if this was a careless error or if a slip of the tongue, whatever it is, slip of the thumbs, right, would be the case on Twitter. No. He's keeping this alive. He's tweeting multiple times a day about Mueller. He's ostensibly angry. He's putting it out there. And he's doing it because he wants nothing more than to get the Democrats baited into doing something dumb, a la introducing articles of impeachment. The guy who wants to litigate, you know, it's always a test of the strength of your position in anything. If you've got a legal battle and you've got a great case, guess who wants to litigate? You do. You want to litigate it. Think about it from his perspective, right? He's getting accused of all these things. He's got Mueller up there declaring, well, I don't have a high confidence of his innocence. And so Trump's response, bring it on like Donkey Kong. And by the way, let's see, it's the end of May 2019. The election will be in November 2020. The sooner we get moving with this impeachment business means it will carry over through the critical summer of 2020 as the campaigns kind of move into high frenetic energy, right? And that's the point in time when all eyes will be on Trump's literal, legal, technical, full exoneration. And not only that, in the process, of course, finding out all the Democratic stink that occurred behind the scenes that made all this possible. Now, Mueller, you heard, too, he does not want to testify. He doesn't want to go to Congress. You hear that whiny little bees? You heard what he said, right? He said, well, these will be my only public remarks, and I really don't want to be testified. The report speaks for itself. Now, he can't opt out of testifying. That's important, right? A congressional subpoena is going to get him in. Why do you think he doesn't want to testify? I am telling you right now, he's got a problem. And he's knee-deep with Comey. He's knee-deep with Brennan. He is a creature of the swamp. And he participated in dragging this thing out at the behest of political operatives within the government. And he knows it. And he knows that if he gets questioned about the report, which he's certainly glad to talk about and you know, evidenced in an 8-minute press conference, he's happy to give a press conference and take no questions from the press. But what Mueller does not want is to be grilled on Capitol Hill by Republicans who are going to go for the jugular. Ken Starr used the word guilty 11 sometimes. In his report on Bill Clinton, guilty, 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 guilty is a real word. Guilty has a legal, technical definition. Now, he didn't, the whole section on there about what Mueller was saying, how he cannot indict the president, he can't file charges against the president, it's up to Congress. Of course, we all knew that. He's just confirming what Dershowitz and I and others have been saying all along, that this is, you know, the president can't be indicted. It's not going to happen. But it I'll tell you, but there can be a lot more evidence of guilt than just we don't have full confidence that the president has not clearly committed a crime, quote unquote. Will the Democrats take the bait? I don't know. This is where Nancy Pelosi is a shrewd operator. Here are her remarks. I want you, people are knocking on her door because all members in her caucus are screaming about this. All the Democratic political presidential candidates are screaming about this. But here's her downplaying it press conference at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco on Wednesday.
Let me just say that I'm very proud of our House Democrats. They've been very, shall we say, conscientious about how they've reached their decisions. And I think it's like 35 of them out of 238, or maybe it's 38 of them out of 238 have said that they wanted to be outspoken on impeachment. And many of them are reflecting their views as well as those of their constituents. Many constituents want to impeach the president, but we want to do what is right and what gets results. But gets results. And we have to remember. So, yes, there are some, and the press makes more of a fuss about the 38 than the 200 who are on a path of finding more information.
Yeah, I think Pelosi's unfortunately too smart to take the bite here, take the bait, and nibble on this on these impeachment lures that Trump is putting out there. Also, as a side observation, permit me, as your host and your dutiful leader here on this program, to point out, you know, she talks about these 38 members quite often, doesn't she? And I get the sense from her tone and substance that she really, really has it in for these 38 members. Who's she talking about? Well, yes, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is talking about her. Who else? Rashida Tlaib? Ilhan Omar? These people are giving Pelosi the vapors, okay? I guarantee you Pelosi would gladly send these 38 members off to some kind of an island or somewhere, she'd even maybe trade them for Republicans. She needs them in her caucus for votes, but they are a pain in her side, and that I think is an important part of the story. So what's the official position from the Democratic Party is that impeachment is not the right thing now. I think, though, that there's two things. The longer you stall it, and the more powerful the group of 38 is, and I think there's more than 38, by the way. So I think the louder the calls are, and the longer she stalls, the closer to election she gets with this. And the hedge is saying, well, not now. The better thing, and it's hard for her to do with this kind of opposition within her caucus, but the better thing to do is to shut it down completely. You go full Lindsey Graham and you say, it's done, it's closed, it's time to move on. We've got things to do here in America, and we want to work for the American people. And Trump is the dutifully elected president. Case closed. And then what we do is, you know, let's work on getting our guy or gal to replace him in 2020. But she can't do that. And the root cause of that, this brings me to my second point. What is all of this about? At the end of the day, what is it all about? When we come back, I'll tell you. Simple. But remember, you've got to have a trained ear when you listen to professional politicians and decipher what it is that they're saying. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Yeah, friends, I forgot. It slipped my mind as I was delving into this Mueller tar pit. I forgot to wish you a happy Kofif Day. Well, yeah, it was 2 years today that Trump tweeted out his text that ended with Kofif. It was some sort of a mangled Twitter mishap. And sent the, you know, it broke the internet. So that was 2 years ago today. And in commemoration of that, Dr. Audio has come up with really a great new roasted bean here at the studios. I don't know if you know this about Dr. Audio. He is really a professional audio man second, and a highly skilled bean roaster first. And so this, I have a little bit of Ethiopia in my cup this morning, and it is delicious. So happy Kofif Day. The comment I had right before the break about Pelosi and what this is all about and why she can't be genuine and play the, I think, you know, Lindsey Graham is the best at this. Jim Jordan is another guy, congressman, a Republican congressman. They're just shutting it down. There's a case closed, done, move on. And I think that would wear well for Democrats, too, politically. The problem is it doesn't bode well. It doesn't help Democrats economically. This impeachment business is all about fundraising. Oh, Sam, you're so cynical. That's nonsense. This is a principled position. And here's what I have to say to you, my Democratic friends. You're getting played. And I know that this is all public record. I've donated a number of times to my Democratic brother-in-law. And so as a consequence of this, I have ended up on every freaking mailing list for every Democratic loser there is. So I get those. And initially I thought I'm going to unsubscribe from these. And I said, hold up, Sam, this is part of your duty, is receiving these emails. It's like getting droppings in your mailbox. Like, you know, if one of your neighbors doesn't like you and just kind of leaves a turd in your USPS box in front of your house, this is what it's like. So I'm getting all these fundraising emails And this is exactly what it is. It's so predictable. There's a little drum beat for impeachment, right? Impeachment. And the Democrats are playing impeachment. That's why I mumbled and got ahead of myself. They're playing impeachment the same way Republicans have always played immigration. Because all of these emails that I get from Republicans every 2 years, immigration, we're going to get tough on immigration. And a bunch of Republican dolts all across the country. And I'm not putting you down. I know that we all got suckered, right? We all got taken. And we know from all of this is that really the GOP has been a giant amnesty bacchanal. But we still sent our money every 2 years, didn't we? And that is exactly what the Democrats are doing. So the reason that Pelosi is being so delicate in the way she's presenting this is because she does not want the dollars to be cut off. And her main role, the value that Pelosi brings is keeping a motley caucus together. But that's one thing. The bigger part of it is she is a fundraising queen, right? She gets fundraising. And she's got a talent for it and knows what spigots not to turn off. I'm going to share just a couple of clips from the Mueller presser. So you don't have to watch or listen the whole 8 to 9 minutes of this. And there's actually two clips that I think are important. And let's talk a little bit about that. You'll know everything about this, right? This is right now. This, for some reason, has been a catalyst for a tremendous amount of discussion both ways. And I want to make sure that going into this weekend, you are set. You are dialed and you know everything that there is to know about all of this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation here on Friday. It's great. We're plowing through the program and taking no prisoners. Now, I want to the shifting burden of proof. I know I've been reading to you the clip, and I want you to hear it from the mouth of babes, or in this case, from Mr. Mueller himself, who is no babe, but looks, what does he remind you of when he's up? So I'm not an expert body language guy. I'm not. But I have some experience. And I looked at him. I tell you, he looked so weak up there. He looked so weak. He just went up there. He bowed his head. He read from a piece of paper. It was just scripted. And every word was carefully crafted. And it tells me that he's under a tremendous amount of pressure. The pressure has shifted from Trump, has shifted from Trump's inner circle, and is full force on the investigators now. Listen to him weaseling around on the burden of proof. This is from the Wednesday press conference, Bob Mueller himself.
The order appointing me special counsel authorized us to investigate actions that could obstruct the investigation. And we conducted that investigation, and we kept the office of the acting attorney general apprised of the progress of our work. And as set forth in the report after that investigation, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime.
Well, let me say this. How do I explain this? I've handled a number of cases where certain government actors, For example, cops don't do the right thing. Someone gets hurt, someone dies, and now we are in the deposition stage of the case. So usually we're talking maybe a year or two after the incident. And what's the dynamic shift? We're no longer dealing with an officer who has a warrant, maybe doesn't have a warrant, is storming into a house, gun drawn, who's got all the power? Well, the cop, right? Now the tables have turned and suddenly we're questioning somebody under oath. And the attorneys are asking probing questions with the intent to get at the truth. And the first thing that witnesses do when they are in this type of scenario, mind you, by the way, Mueller is not being questioned under oath. He's given a one-sided press conference. And so I think that actually helps my point. You'll see why. But what people do when they are under oath and are being asked to explain why they did certain things, what do they begin to say? What's the whole gestalt of what they want to get across? It's all about the procedure was X. We did X because of the procedure. They cling to protocols and find ways to rationalize their conduct within those protocols. Okay? The order appointing me, right? He's establishing there was an order. I followed orders. What is this, Nuremberg? My God. Counsel authorized us to investigate actions. We kept the acting attorney general apprised. Who is he talking about? Rosenstein, that little weasel. I kept the weasel informed. The guy who set this all up to begin with. Can't wait for these people to start answering questions under oath. We will find out how that whole thing came about and why Mueller was selected and how it is that Rosenstein knew Mueller and how far back they go. And as set forth in the report after that investigation, and then he stutters. He breaks a little bit there and there's a little pause and he says, if we had the confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, and adding really quickly, we did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime. Well, imagine a jury finds somebody. How would this work, right? Find somebody not guilty. Well, he's not guilty. But we can't determine if he's innocent. He's not guilty, if you follow that. That's not what the Constitution says. This is not how our criminal justice system works. And more importantly, every law, every rule, right, has elements to it, has things like, you know, just basic things that need to be satisfied in order for you to break the law of that or violate that particular rule, right? Does this make sense? And you have to prove that each one of those things got broken, and you have to have proof that will hold up in court, and there are rules for that type of evidence. And that evidence, those rules of court apply whether it's an impeachment trial or whether it's a criminal prosecution in federal court. It's the same rules, just so you know. And if you don't have the evidence, you can't satisfy the rule and you're not guilty. That's how it works. This is so mealy-mouthed, and you can smell the justifications that are being put forward here. The other clip here I'll play right when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
So Mueller, I'm telling you right now, is in a world of hurt, not just because he's in legal jeopardy, but he also has to face the indignity of shuffling around the DC party scene, right? He's an elite guy, former FBI director, big poobah in the Justice Department. So he, and now, you know, he's been probably the belle of the ball. He's walking around DC, going to all the fancy restaurants, him and the missus, out and about. And everybody is looking at him, right? And all this whole thing's going on. And Mueller isn't saying a word because, you know, he is a moral man and he is following all the rules. There's no leaks coming out of Team Mueller, or so we are led to believe. But he's going around town. You got to understand this. You got to understand how DC works. He's going around Washington and he is a hero to these people. He hasn't done squat, but he's a hero. And it's in this context that you've got to understand the part of the presser where he talks about charging the president was never an option. Listen to this.
Under long-standing department policy, a president cannot be charged with a federal crime while he is in office. That is unconstitutional. Even if the charge is kept under seal and hidden from public view, that too is prohibited. The special counsel's office is part of the Department of Justice, and by regulation, it was bound by that department policy. Charging the president with a crime was therefore not an option we could consider.
So everybody's talking about this clip as this being the referral, the coded wink, wink message to Congress. This is Congress. This is your job. And that's how everyone's reading it. I'm adding another observation. That's correct, by the way. But the other take on this is that this is Mueller justifying himself to all of his you know, inside the Beltway buddies. He's saying, hey, guys, I know I was the cool guy. I know you guys were all giving me the thumbs up. And thanks for that, because I love you, too. But really, I'm just a cog in the machine inside the Justice Department. And there's this pesky, longstanding policy that the Justice Department can't just file charges against a sitting president, that it's really the proper way. And this is what's implied here. The proper way is an impeachment proceeding in Congress, which is, of course, a system that we want. We do not want a cabinet member, like, let's say, an attorney general, to be able to at will effectuate a coup against a sitting president by crippling him with criminal charges. And that's why we have the system in Congress, impeachment, that's a proper way to hold a president accountable. All of this said, right, Mueller and his team were absolutely motivated and are still motivated, are desperate, I think is the right word, to find something to hang their hat on. This language here that if we had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said that, is the best they can do with everything they have riding on it, from their professional reputation, their personal reputation, they're humiliated in DC. This is humiliating. They've let all of their peeps down. And the fact that under these conditions, unlimited budget, unlimited time, unlimited access, public opinion behind them, and with all of that, they came up short, tells you everything you need to know. There's nothing here. Nada. Zip. Zilch. Zero. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
No, that went by fast. Sam Rogowski here. We're going to have a great second hour coming right up. One of the things I will tell you about is incredible news out of England. We talked a little bit about this last week. Some very interesting things. Also, news out of North Korea really puts an interesting perspective on the failed Vietnam summit. Yes, but there's more. We'll get to everything. Don't worry. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation here behind the Sam Nation microphone, deep behind the orange curtain in an undisclosed location. And yes, it's Friday, TGIF. I'm going to add that. What a week. I know it's only 4 days with the Memorial Day weekend. I was lucky enough to have the day off on Monday, and these 4 days have really felt like 10. So I don't know where you're at with that, but... yeah, it's been a long week. Ready for a weekend, and I'm glad it's coming up. So one thing that happened last Thursday, we didn't have a clear idea of the exact results at the time we were doing the show on Friday, but there just was an incredible result in the European Parliament elections in Great Britain. And I'll tell you, so here's the quick background on this. As you know, in 2016, the year that Trump won the presidency, there was an echo. And I don't even know if it's an echo. I think it was a contemporary event of significance that occurred in the United Kingdom. And that was the vote to leave the European Union. Now, it's become known as Brexit. And at the time, a lot of people forget kind of how this all came about, but it wasn't necessarily supported by any one party. In fact, the two dominant parties, I would say it would be fair to characterize them as institutionally opposed to Britain leaving the EU. The Tories, or the Conservatives, who at the time were led by a man named David Cameron, who also was prime minister. If you remember, he was a very sleek, good-looking, always perfectly coiffed man. What did he do before? Wasn't he some sort of lobbyist or some kind of a fixer? He had an interest, but basically was a what we would call here a swamp thing, right? He was a party guy, a conservative party guy, who was absolutely opposed to it and did not get behind Brexit. But there were a number of conservatives that did, and one of them was, I believe, Boris Johnson. He led the effort, but a big driving force behind all of it was Nigel Farage. Now, Nigel Farage was a UK Independence Party leader. He founded that party, and after the Brexit vote, Farage quit the business. So look, my work here is done. And it was really, I'll tell you what Brexit was. Brexit, the vote to leave the European Union for the Brits, was very similar to our vote here in the United States to elect Trump. And I tell you because every year we vacation in Barbados, and it was... We were there right after the election in 2016, and there were quite a few Brits there. And this was a funny experience. I may have talked about this. I did the show live from Barbados when we were there that fall, and I may have talked about it on the program. But I'll tell you, the Brits that were there were very excited about Brexit, and it was the same kind of thing as supporting or voting for Trump. And we had this, and what I mean is people were very hesitant to share their feelings or the truth about their position on the topic. They didn't want to come out and say, I'm voting for Brexit. And so the polling The polling reflected a stay vote. The polling in the U.S. reflected a Hillary vote. And it turned out very differently. And so we had some friends there, an older couple from England, and they were saying to us, did you vote for Trump? And my wife got all nervous because, you know, this is not how we want to start a conversation with people. But they said, well, we did. Yes, we voted for Trump. And they lit up. They said, great. Now ask us if we voted for Brexit. And we thought, OK, did you? I guess this is where we're going. Did you vote for Brexit? So, yeah, you bet we did. And they were proud of it. But everybody I've talked to said, look, we didn't really want to talk about it because institutional establishment media and politics and culture in Great Britain was vehemently opposed to it. And so you were made out to be, and tell me if this sounds familiar, you're made out to be a racist, a xenophobe, an isolationist, right? A bad person, a hater, if you dare align yourself with the Brexit movement. So Brexit passes. And now, in my view, the similarities between Brexit and Trump continue. And the Trump election continue. Why? Well, in the most significant way, there has been an establishment push in this country to invalidate, to nullify the vote that put Trump into office. This investigation into Trump, for example, and the Russia collusion and all of this, and the idea that he wasn't elected fairly and that this was some kind of a cheat of the system, right? All an effort to invalidate, nullify the vote that happened in 2016. The same has occurred with Brexit. And so what happened is David Cameron, being the head of the government, being the prime minister, he did the right thing and he resigned. And in his resignation, he said, look, I'm not the guy to lead the government. Clearly, I've misjudged the will of the people. I'm not the guy to lead the government forward. And in his place in the fight for leadership within the Conservative Party, and because the Conservative Party led the coalition for whoever that person becomes the prime minister, right? The next leader of the Great Britain has to be somebody who's pro Brexit. Well, the leader they picked is Theresa May, and she's been just an absolute overcooked limp noodle, right? She is jelly. And I can't tell you honestly whether she's for Brexit or against Brexit. Frankly, it doesn't matter because the outcome, the net result is that that Great Britain is still in the European community and Europe is having its way demanding all of these concessions and monetary payments and this and that. And it is against this backdrop that Nigel Farage, the original impetus for Brexit, says enough is enough. I'm starting a new party. So not only did he start a party before, now he's saying, I'm starting a new party. It's a single purpose party. It's called the Brexit Party. How original. And this Brexit Party went into European election, parliamentary elections. So this is the vote that Great Britain makes to select representatives that they send to Brussels. Now, I have to tell you something. What a giant F you. I mean, you know that when you do the little middle finger thing with you're like turning a handle, a fictional handle, and you slowly raise your middle finger. That is what Great Britain did. They are literally across the channel, pointed at Brussels, raised not one, but two giant middle fingers per person that made a vote because they're sending to the European Parliament an overwhelming majority. Well, a plurality, I would say. So the Brexit Party got 30% of the vote. Conservatives got 8.9%. The party that right now is leading the government got less than 9%. They got beaten by the Brexit Party 3-1. And so 30% of the members of Parliament, of the European Parliament, get sent to Brussels are going to be there to remove England, Great Britain, from European Parliament. This is epic. But it doesn't stop there. Now what's going to happen is there's a general election that's coming up in the fall. I think in October. And the Brexit Party, led by Nigel Farage, has decided that what? They're going to actually run and compete in that election. Guess where they are in polling? They are number two behind the Lib Dems, Liberal Democrats, who are always, by the way, they're always a third tier, kind of a small party. And so they're gaining. What does this mean? The big parties, establishment politics, the people don't want them. Does this sound familiar? Why am I talking about Great Britain? Who gives a crap? Sam, we're over here. We don't. It's a small country. It matters because there's something going on in the world against globalism, against establishment politics, against collectivism, against socialism, against all of these crazy left-wing utopian policies. You know what? We don't like it. You know what? Great Britain doesn't like it. You know what? There's some European countries that don't like it. I just read an article about, I believe it was Norway. They're walking back some of their social welfare system. They're saying, look, it's not working. It's not working. It's not good for our people. Believe it or not, it's creating laziness. We're attracting immigrants who are freeloading. This is a government. This is Scandinavia, right? This is insane. And I bring it up because we get a little bit caught up here in this country with labels. We're getting caught up with Trump, pro-Trump, anti-Trump. Trump is not the root cause of the frustration that we have with our system. Trump is a symptom of it in the sense that he came along, captured our anger and our angst, has at times imperfectly, I will agree, tried to navigate it and buck the system. But every time the system tries to knock him down, every time that he gets up and tries to do something about immigration and Congress doesn't give him the money to do it, every time he tries to do something about immigration and the courts shut him down, that is building a seething anger among the electorate that the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress, in the Senate and in the House, these buffoons that are running for president, John Kasich, who's out there still trying to be relevant. I'm telling you, all these people do not get it. The move toward globalism, collectivism in the last 30 to 40 years is leaving people pissed off. Our founders had it right. They wanted small government at a local level serving our individual needs, and they recognized that the needs of me in Irvine are different maybe from the needs of you in Plano, Texas. And then that's okay. And that my government on my local level can serve me. And in Europe, guys, and I know this, I've been there on more than one occasion. I'm telling you, those differences are even more stark. And trying to put together nearly 30 countries, 30 cultures, 15 languages, whatever, 16 languages, and getting them all to have the same rules, the same this, the same that, telling the Brits what kind of tea kettles they can and cannot have, telling Holland, the Netherlands, how much fruit they can or cannot grow because there can't be more of this type of fruit than that type of fruit. And the French are saying, well, no, our cheese and our butter has to be at a certain standard. Look, that was the it may sound good to the elitists at the top. It may sound good to the politicians. It may for big banks, okay, and trading houses, it is better for them to standardize, okay, product lines. But it doesn't make sense for people living in villages. It doesn't make sense for people living in small towns. The Democratic Party here in this country, the Republican Party here in this country, has forgotten the people in the villages. They have forgotten that there are, and they talk all about it. There's a guy running. I don't even remember his name half the time. He's an absolute idiot. He's running for, he's got like less than 1% of the vote. What's his name? No, not Hickenlooper. That guy has like 0.5%, but there's some guy. And he just talks about learning about every street corner and everything. They don't want to learn about every street corner. They don't, Democrats wouldn't want to go to a village and find out that they don't want to be taxed at 50%, that they don't want welfare for anything that moves, that they don't want abortion, you know, 3 weeks after a baby is born. They don't want to hear any of that. They're not interested. They want to preach. And they want us to listen. And that is not federalism, right? And that's not how our representative democracy ought to work. So with all of that said, there's a big shakeup coming in Great Britain. And it matters to us because it may be the beginnings, or it may be the first strike in what will set off a chain reaction death blow to one of the greatest world order experiments ever perpetrated. And that is the European Union. Politicians like Obama, I think even Mitt Romney and others, they love the idea. All these guys that are getting together this weekend at Bilderberg, you know, that elitist conference where the world's movers and shakers get together and dream about creating a better planet. It's a better planet for them. It's a better planet. It's turning us into an Amazon. Top down, controlled, and we're all the same and managed and, you know, and homogenized. It's not who we are. We as human beings are individuals. And every time that world leaders, rulers have tried this type of thing, has resulted in misery, in destruction, in revolution. And eventually the guy who tried it ends up with his head lopped off. But you know what? We're not teaching history in schools for so, you know, I mean, whatever. We're doomed to repeat it all. But good news is we'll know every one of the genders out there, all 300 of them. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
I mentioned that there was some polling that came out of England, that Great Britain, that the Brexit Party came in second after the Liberal Democrats in the. Basically, in the race for who will be the next prime minister. I think that's the best way of explaining it. So Nigel Farage, by the way, from total outsider, right? He's a self-made guy. He's a businessman. He's a multimillionaire. Goes into politics later in life. Sound familiar? Anybody? Right? But very articulate guy, very principled person. Definitely anti-collectivist, anti-European Union guy. He has a real chance of becoming prime minister. But this polling, what I wanted to get at here is this polling, that this result happened in spite of the fact that the YouGov pollsters that executed on this poll hid the Brexit Party from the choices. You had to go into other, and then there was some drop-down menu, and then that's where you found the Brexit Party. And their justification was basically saying, look, we don't include all the new parties. Okay, you don't include all the new parties, but this new party is not the new party that won one seat in some little township somewhere in Wales, okay? This is the party that won the most seats. It was a party that was 8 weeks old, right? And won the most votes by a long shot. It's the party that beat 3-1 the party that is currently in power. That's epic. And this is how, these are some of the tricks employed, right, by the establishment, by the swamp to keep us thinking. And they have to admit, oh, well, they came in second. Yeah, it's good. Good result. You know, wow. But the Lib Dems are ahead. You know, we can, you know, those are people. Those are people we can get behind. They're trusted. Can you imagine how the results would have changed if it was in the first menu? Because you know how people are. They don't go to the other. They don't see the, you know. And so that really was only go. And that's the people, by the way, that are responding. Yeah, I'm for the Brexit Party. And there are lots of people who have jobs in public places, who are school teachers, who are public servants, who do not want to be in any way, shape, or form publicly affiliated with this. There are Brexiteers that were campaigning this last round of elections. Old people getting beat up that were working polling booths. Milkshakes getting thrown, not just at the leaders, but at regular voters that were out and attending events for the Brexit Party. It's shameful. It's real. I mean, it's called voter suppression. But my point is, we will see these type of shenanigans in the United States here coming into the general election. And that's part of what I just don't trust this Biden polling at all. They got Biden up by 20 points. Biden looks decrepit. I got this guy I know that I work with, an attorney, who has gone all in for Biden. And so his Instagram is covered with pictures of him and Biden. And these are flattering photos with Biden and this attorney. And Biden just, he looks like he's in these photos that are professionally taken and are meant to be used in a way that would promote Biden's brand. He looks like he's straight from Madame Tussauds. He's waxified. He did that pervy thing again with a little girl. He says to a little girl, boy, I sure hope, he puts his hands on her shoulders, and she's, what, 9? I sure hope I bet you're as smart as you are beautiful. Ugh! And they have him up by 20 points? I'm very suspicious of that. Once again, I'm telling you, the Democratic Party, they are anointing a nominee. And they're setting themselves up again, I think, for a tremendous disappointment. Biden, you know, I thought he would come across a lot stronger. And for as long as we didn't hear anything from him, that's a good thing. But now that we're hearing things from him, it's not good. It's not looking good. So I don't, again, back to why I don't trust polling. Here with what happened in this most recent poll in Great Britain, the YouGov poll, you see exactly the kind of dirty tricks that they play. And it still produces good enough results, but not, I don't think, you know, truly a fair or accurate depiction of what's going on. All right, don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rajofsky, all right, TheHill.com had a piece today that caught my eye. And, well, I thought it was a joke headline. It reads, inside the DNC's plan to defeat Trump. And see, I was confused here because I didn't realize they had a plan. No, I'm being dead serious. So this article, and it goes on for 5 pages, is all about a battle plan and a get out the vote strategy and all of this stuff. Okay? We're told that the DNC has launched an institution called the Organizing Corps 2020. They're going to train 1,000 college-age students to be Democratic operatives. Boy, this, I mean, first of all, it sounds a little bit like Scientology. I'm a little, It's like the Sea Org. Anyway, so I'm reading this and I'm going, don't you get it? There's something big going on in the world. You don't understand what that big thing is. You don't understand that your policies, people want nothing to do with. They're done. They don't want globalism. They certainly don't want socialism. And by the way, the people out there that do want these things, younger people who live at home with mom in the basement and smoke a lot of weed, are very unlikely to go out and vote. How many times must you Democrats learn this lesson? Yeah. You know, the problem with this is funny. And Robbie, I'm not saying you would know about this, but I guess THC levels now in marijuana are way higher than they were in the 60s. Way higher. I mean, the THC level in marijuana in the 60s was like 2%, and now it's as high as 90 to 100% in some strains, because, you know, the technology is evolving. So you've got all the, I'm telling you, all these old school Woodstock, you know, baby boomer Democrats, right, that have now grown up, they think they can count on these pothead young, you know, lib socialists to get out and vote. They can't even get out of bed. So, yes, according to Jonathan Easley, who is one of the Hill's more delusioned writers, inside the DNC's plan to defeat Trump, I did not read anything in there that gives me the least bit of worry. All right. Yes, North Korea. I'm going to get to that right next. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rzhovsky, my whistle is wetted with my, what is this? My Ethiopian, fresh roasted Ethiopian kofif. Happy Kofif Day, if you're just tuning in. All right. We have word from South Korea. Intelligence sources are reporting that following the failed Vietnam summit between Kim Jong-un and one Donaldus Maximus, Trump the Great, didn't work out, right? And apparently, Kim Jong-un, after that summit, executed five officials and sent at least two to a forced labor camp. Do you want to know why? This is interesting. Apparently, I don't know why I'm laughing at this. I shouldn't be, but if it's true, right? If this really happened, I guess what went down is that an interpreter, at the very end of the summit, Trump stands up and says, "No deal," and walks out on Doughboy. So, you know, Mop Top, right? Mop Top there is sitting there and you know, he's mumbling in Korean to his interpreter, no, I have one more offer to make. And Trump is out of the room. He's walking off. And this is, by the way, how you conduct a negotiation. I mean, you don't sit around and wait for them to mumble back at you. You look, we're here to do a deal. We said the deal would be between point A and point B. What the hell is this point C place you're trying to get me to? I'm out of here. Trump walks off, and Mop Top is so pissed off that he executes five officials over it. The actual translator, I guess, was sent to a camp, forced labor camp, which, you know, might as well be a death sentence. And then his special envoy, the Minister of U.S. Affairs, which I guess would be something like if we had diplomatic relations with North Korea, would be the ambassador to the United States from North Korea. He's the head guy who's supposed to know everything about the United States, and he just got summarily executed at a military base. Bam. Done. What does that tell us? It's important. It tells us that Trump absolutely played them. And I'm not just going at this as a Trumpophile. I'm telling you, the result was so unexpected and so humiliating that something had to be done about it, and some heads had to roll. In this case, literally, because if the desired outcome was, as the media here led us to believe, that Mop Top, you know, ran the board with Trump and that Mop Top got everything that he wanted and that Mop Top was the victor of it, then I'm telling you right now, he would not be executing his top lieutenants. So once again, if this news is true, it directly contradicts the talking points that the mainstream media has been shoving down our throats for quite a while. Now, I bet Trump is listening to this and he's thinking of people in his own inner circle he wouldn't mind sending out to Andrews Air Force Base and no, I'm joking. I know that clip is going to get played somewhere, and I'm going to get in trouble for it. I can feel it already. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network. I'll be back.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, all right. You know, you may have missed this, but it certainly boiled my blood when I heard that the CEO of Disney, Bob Iger, came out and said that Disney would boycott Georgia, essentially. They'd have to give in to the wishes of their people. You know, if a filming opportunity came up in Georgia, they may not be able to film there. Hey, here was the exact response that Iger made to a Reuters reporter when asked if Disney would continue to film in Georgia if the abortion law goes into effect. Listen to this.
Well, I think if it becomes law, it'll be very difficult to produce, or I rather doubt we will. I think many people who work for us will not want to work there, and we'll have to heed their wishes in that regard.
So let's get over the obvious irony that a company that makes kid movies won't film somewhere that kills kids. But I mean, let's just get beyond that point. The better part of this is that Disney operates and films in places that do way worse than what Georgia's doing, even, I think, using liberal standards. So they film in the United Arab Emirates. You know this? The UAE. Not only is abortion illegal there, but being gay is illegal. Do you understand how really incredibly hypocritical and silly these positions are, and indefensible these positions are? They film in Croatia, in Bolivia, both places with tight restriction on abortions. But oh my goodness, Georgia comes along and passes their insane law that may not even stick, right? And guess what, right? All hell breaks loose. All this is virtue signaling. It's empty, it's shallow, and it's a classic corporatist move of America where it's not about any substance. The morality of it doesn't matter. It's how is this perceived? What are our PR people telling us? Are we playing something based on political correctness? Walt Disney would be rolling around in his grave. He already is. I'm telling you, the Disney company is a shadow of its former self. All right. So have a great weekend, guys. This was great. Really enjoyed having you. Follow us on Twitter until we build the new website, and we are actively working on it. Until we do this, Twitter is the place where we will disseminate information. So it's at Sam Nation is the Twitter handle. Follow us there. I will reach out during the week from time to time with pithy thoughts. All right, have a great weekend. Enjoy time with your families if you have the weekend off. And if not, find some time to rest. Have a wonderful time. Thank you. Over and out.